Hello, it's Wednesday 11th of August. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson. On today's show, Gary Bauman of Check In Asia and I are delighted to welcome Manila-based Feliz Axelan to discuss the year so far in the Philippines. So, let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. So today's show is part four of our 2021 The Year So Far series, where we're talking to local analysts in each country of the region. So far, we've covered Singapore, Vietnam, and Laos. And this week, we're delighted to be talking Philippines with Feliz Axelan, General Manager of Trade Wings Tours. So Feliz, thanks very much for coming on the show. How are you doing today, and where are you? Because you're not actually in the Philippines, right?
Thanks so much, Gary and Hannah, for inviting me. Yes, I'm actually in Switzerland at the moment and enjoying a little bit of vacation, but also working a bit far from home. So we've been enjoying really good weather these days.
Beautiful. So whereabouts exactly in Switzerland are you?
I'm currently residing in Hörgiswil. So it's a town that's 10 minutes away from Luzern and mainly known for the glass blowing factory they have here, which is the glassy Hörgiswil. So, I mean, next time, if you visit Switzerland, maybe you can come over to Hörgiswil when you're visiting Luzern.
Oh, as soon as we can, as soon as we can. So, Feliz, we've got so much to pack into the next 30 minutes, but let's start by going back to the beginning. You were pretty much born into the travel industry. Your parents at the helm of Trade Wings, which is one of the largest wholesale travel agencies in the Philippines. So was your heart always set on being part of the travel industry?
Not really. Actually, So my course when I was in university was European languages, but I only took that mainly because my parents told me to take it. So it wasn't really exactly where my heart belonged to. I wanted to take film and audio communications, but, you know, as usual, we have to obey our parents, and I just went along with it. And after I graduated, I actually worked as a social media and community manager for a gaming company, so video games, because that's pretty much actually one of my hobbies. Didn't last long, because after 6 months, I figured that, you know, this is really just a hobby that I want to keep for the rest of my life, but not as a career that I want to pursue. And so I decided to kind of try out a bit with my family's business, which is I asked my parents if I could, you know, try working for them. And I've been working with them since time immemorial. I think that was 2012 that I started working with them. I did quit a bit around 2014. That's when I met Hannah working for another company. So I was based in Hungary, in Budapest, for a good year, and then decided to come back to the Philippines and return to the family business.
Nice. There ever since. So in recent months, you've also set up the Learned Tribe to promote online learning for school students. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so it's actually born out of the pandemic and also inspired by the webinars we've been holding for our travel agencies. And, you know, we noticed that there has been a lot of donor fatigue. And the reason for that was because they kept on giving, but, you know, not being able to get anything in return. And so we thought of the Learned Tribe, in which we would contact key speakers or people who are experts in their fields who can share something about their expertise. And mostly it was initially we did it with social media management. And then the second one was more on an inspirational talk. So the participants would pay a certain amount, or maybe just $10 or less. And majority of the proceeds actually go to a certain project. And at that time, we were dealing with an educational program for some students who couldn't afford going to school because of the online learning. So we were able to raise some funds for them to be able to buy gadgets that could help them with online learning. So obviously, because of what's been happening now, so many things are happening in the travel industry. And so I had to pause that project a bit. But obviously, it's not also completely closed. So definitely, it's going to come back or come around anytime soon.
You mentioned that it was forged during the pandemic. There was a specific need for it. Do you think that need will continue into the future?
I have a feeling it would. I mean, charities don't stay short, right? So there's always a, purpose to be helping others. So I think it would continue, but you know, it really depends on the workload that I want to have, because it's a one-man team, so there's really nobody else helping me with that. So let's see, hopefully it will push through in the future whenever I have the time.
Right, so let's get back to travel. As you mentioned in the intro there, you're actually in Switzerland at the moment. I think you've been traveling for a little while. I'm not sure if it's just Switzerland or other parts of Europe. Tell us a bit more about your trip. What are you doing? Are you on vacation? Are you working? Is it a bit of both?
Yep, it's a bit of both. So the reason why I'm here in Switzerland is because my partner is here. And thankfully, Switzerland is one of the only EU countries who are issuing visas for long-term partnerships. So regardless if you are, you know, engaged or married or having a relationship for a long time and you can prove it, then they would grant you a visa. Because back then, I asked the Swiss embassy if I could actually enter Switzerland or the Schengen area with a Schengen visa that was issued to me by the French embassy, and they said no. So things changed then, and they were saying that you can only enter the Schengen area with the destination country that you're going to. So in that case, in Swiss. So I had to cancel my French visa, and then I had to apply for that long-term relationship visa with the Swiss embassy. So I've been doing that since December last year, and I've been staying 3 months within an 180-day period. And I'd be working, obviously, from 6 to 12 in the morning, and then I'm free for the rest of the day. But because of the summer reopening of a lot of the European countries, I was able to also visit Greece and Spain. So that was... Also gave me a lot of insights on how things are going in terms of entry restrictions, how the countries have started reopening for visitors, how much visitors are they having. And it's actually a refreshing thing to see, because it's not something I could see if I was just stuck in the Philippines, right? So it's been a good 2 months now. I'm expected to leave on the 30th of August and come back home. But hopefully I'll be able to do this again in the future.
Nice. And I'm sure, like you said, that it must be fascinating actually to have been in the Philippines for so long and see how the pandemic is being handled there, and then see how it's being handled back in Europe. So what are the key differences you've really seen in terms of, let's say, how the Swiss government is looking at managing COVID-19 versus the Philippines?
One thing is, you know, in the Philippines, the vaccination rollout hasn't been really great. We are still on that stage wherein we are only allowed to take the vaccines if we are under priority groups. So the frontliners, senior citizens, hospitality workers who are doing face-to-face transactions, people with comorbidities. And I'm not part of any of those groups. So I have already surrendered to the fact that I may not be able to get my vaccination until 2022. But when I arrived here in Switzerland, my boyfriend decided to also register me in one of the vaccination sites, and we got it. They didn't even ask if I was from Switzerland, or they didn't even ask me if I had any insurance covering the vaccination. I got both doses for free, no questions asked. And now I also have an EU digital COVID certificate, which is pretty much accepted across all European countries. So that's one thing that really amazed me about Switzerland. Their vaccination rollout has been really efficient. The moment you register for a schedule, I guess it depends on every canton, right? And the canton apparently that we are in, which is Nidwalden, they were very efficient in this, and they gave us our appointment within a week. And the duration of the second dose is only after a month. So we had our EU digital certificate also processed the same day. But with that digital certificate, they were also able to, you know, generate a QR code if in case your vaccination is still not valid for some countries because it hasn't lapsed 14 days, then you can still take RT-PCR tests or antigen tests. And they also put that in the same app where your digital COVID certificate is. So that's something that I've not seen in my country, at least. They also have a unified COVID tracing app that both locals and visitors are using. And it does alert you if you've come in close contact with anyone who tested positive. So Those are two, vaccination rollout and the unified COVID tracing app. But also, I could see that they really relied heavily on the experts to find out if they should reopen for local businesses, or they should reopen as well in terms of their domestic tourism. And that's also one thing I kind of envy, because in the Philippines, if you wanted to go out of Metro Manila, you always had to get tested. And most of the regions, they only accept RT-PCR testing. So that's like trying to go out of the country and visiting other countries. And they have so many restrictions that you opt not to visit anymore. You opt to just stay at home, right? And those are some of the things that I find really fascinating here in Switzerland in terms of how they're handling the pandemic. Of course, Switzerland is not the perfect country in terms of that. They've also had second waves and third waves due to people would also try to not follow the regulations they have in place. But they're trying their best, and I can see that really happening. Also, one thing that I really admire them for is because you pay high taxes, but you get the benefits. And I remember one time I had a little bit of a COVID scare. I thought that I was going to test positive, and I met some friends then, and I told them, I warned them, like, okay, I'm going to take my test today just in case, because I know some of them work in the service industry, and they're gonna meet people that day. And my friend said, no, actually that's fine. If I tested positive, that means I would have to quarantine or self-isolate for 10 days, and the government is gonna pay me all the business I've lost during those 10 days and also pay them their salary. So that's one thing that I really wish we had in the Philippines. Like, you're not even worried about not getting paid. You're not even worried about losing business because you know your government has your back. And that's something that I really appreciate about how Switzerland is handling the pandemic in terms of social welfare.
That's fascinating to hear. And as you've been traveling around, you mentioned as well as Switzerland, you've been in Spain and in Greece. What have you noticed in terms of demand? Are there quite a lot of people traveling? Is it different nationalities? Are people taking precautions? Are keeping distance and things like that? What kind of observations have you noticed?
In Greece and Spain were very different in a sense. In Greece, because they started accepting vaccinated travelers since May 14, I've seen a really high jump on the number of visitors they have. We went to the islands that time, and I was telling my friends that, it kind of seems like the number of visitors they have are already pre-pandemic levels because there's so many. And the thing was, I was also a little bit afraid because people started not wearing masks when they're outside, even in clubs or in restaurants. The waiters would wear masks, but it's below their nose, so it doesn't really make sense. But at the same time, they do have restrictions in place. You have to have a QR code filled up before you arrive in Greece, but they don't really check it. They just look at the QR code. They don't scan it. So sometimes I wonder, like, if these regulations in place are really checked. But at the same time, we were there when they only had an average of 200 cases. And when we left, they had about 2,000. So that's a huge jump from the average cases they had. But mainly because with the restrictions in place, what we noticed was that a lot of people were really breaking the rules. Majority of the establishments were supposed to close at 1 a.m., but obviously the partygoers wanted to still have fun. So they were having their villa parties. And at some point, I think in an island in Ios, they had a super spreader party in one of the villas and they had to close down the island. So that's one thing that was a little bit concerning for me in terms of reopening tourism, because they were so lax with everything. But what I noticed in Greece as well was majority of the travelers coming in were from America, from the US. So that's one thing that that surprised me a bit. In Spain, it was really majority of them locals. All the time I've been hearing Spanish, even from the tourists who are going around. But I mean, in Madrid and in Barcelona, there weren't as much as I saw in terms of number of tourists in Greece. So I think majority of them were in the islands, or maybe in Mallorca or in the Balearic Islands. So I think they were really trying to spend more of their vacation in the beach area. Even here in Switzerland, there aren't too many tourists yet, and which is actually good because at least you get to enjoy as well the sceneries, especially in the summer. But you do see a lot of Swiss people moving about and enjoying their country for now.
That's really fascinating. So, you know, having had this experience and having traveled around as a tourist in Europe, what do you think the Southeast Asian tourism industry in general can learn from these experiences in Europe when they start to look at reopening?
One thing that I really like about EU is because, you know, EU would not be EU if they weren't well coordinated and have a unified way of making free movement easier for both EU residents and third country nationals. So earlier in the pandemic, I think they have already come up with the idea of the EU digital COVID certificate, which is recognized by all EU and the European Economic Zone countries for a smoother and coordinated lifting of entry restrictions for each country. And I haven't seen this being put into place within Southeast Asia yet, although I believe there have been talks of a pan-ASEAN travel bubble. But as you know, the epidemiological situation in every Southeast Asian country varies, so this is a bit difficult to roll out. Generally speaking, though, EU is able to do this because the majority of the Western world is able to get a hold of the vaccines much earlier. And while those in the East, like us, have had to wait for our supplies, and this is the main reason why the EU is so confident in opening up their borders amongst each other, as they have already started having more than 50% of the country's citizens fully vaccinated for the summer.
Yeah, you mentioned a few minutes ago, we'll bring it back to the Philippines. You mentioned a few minutes ago there that, you know, getting out of Metro Manila has been pretty tricky. How would you summarize what is the current situation for tourism in the Philippines? Because it is pretty complex. Looking from the outside, it seems incredibly complicated.
It is. It's really shaky at the moment. Actually, a lot of our travel agents have already surrendered to just waiting this whole thing out, because whenever we think that there's a little ray of hope, at least for domestic tourism, another strict lockdown is put in place. And since we have also been on lockdown since March 2020, we've not had any incoming visitors at all for leisure travel. So sometimes we wonder if it's just better to not do any business at all than to continue pushing, because we encounter more problems and cancellations and actually lose more than gain something due to travel restrictions being imposed almost immediately after they are announced. So we do have a lot of travel agencies and hotels who have temporarily closed, not completely closed, because apparently it's much more expensive to close a business. And, you know, they have pivoted to a completely different business. So it's a really bleak and blurry future for us, but we are holding on.
And what do you think those key blockers have really been for that revitalization of the Philippines' domestic tourism industry this year?
Mainly lockdowns, really, for the most part. And of course, the uncoordinated lifting of restrictions amongst regions. So like I mentioned, if you want to go out, you had to take an RT-PCR test everywhere you go, at least if you're coming out of the capital. And everyone has their own contact tracing app. So if you wanted to go to Boracay, they have their own QR code. If you wanted to go to Baguio, they also have their own QR code. And I can't even count how many tracing apps I had to download just to be able to go to those places. Of course, they also have their own rules. Sometimes the Department of Tourism says these are the destinations that are open, but obviously those are the main destinations that people always visit. And then we didn't know that there are actually smaller destinations that have opened up without telling the Department of Tourism. So it's really, really uncoordinated. And I see that the Department of Tourism is really trying their best to make this seamless. They do have a safe travel app that they've come up with, wherein you can see all the undergoing restrictions. But I can also see their struggle, because sometimes the local government unit also doesn't inform them in advance. Like, they just get surprised, like, oh, okay, Baguio told us it's not allowed anymore. Oh, okay, Boracay says like this. So it's if I would put it in a nutshell, it's pretty much uncoordinated, mainly because every local government unit is acting on their own accord.
Yeah, Felice, you made an interesting point earlier, an interesting comparison when you were talking about it, particularly in Europe and the US, where they have salary support and furlough schemes, which actually help people through financially through what has been a very, very difficult time. Here in Southeast Asia, we haven't really had that, and most countries are tending to look at soft loans and those kinds of things for tourism businesses, which are very difficult because take-up is inevitably going to be low. Because people don't want to take on loans when they're not actually earning any revenues. I mean, is that the situation in the Philippines? That's certainly been the case here in Malaysia.
Yeah, it actually is. The thing was, we did get a bit of help from the government back in April and May 2020. And all of our employees were able to get at least $300 worth of aid, cash aid, which is not a loan. So it was really given by the government. And at some point, if you also fall under the 4Ps, which is a certain income bracket, you can also get from your local government through your town hall. And that one helped a bit. But obviously, the government couldn't stretch that until today. So they are offering the small loans for business. And a lot of the travel agencies actually couldn't apply for this because one of the major requirements was to upload the financial statements that you've had 2018, 2019, and 2020. And a lot of us couldn't get access of this because a lot of us were not even allowed to open our offices. The majority of our financial statements are on hard copies, either with the BIR or within our office. So it's a little bit difficult for us to get the requirements in place. And yeah, you mentioned that, taking loans is not really the best solution for us because we have to pay it back, right? So, and we have not been earning anything since the lockdown happened. So we have had a lot of the travel agencies who have forwarded this concern to the Department of Tourism. And I think they're trying their best to find another solution for everybody else now.
Yeah, what you were saying just then about the offices being closed and having the documents there and not being allowed to go in, I think it's just must be very frustrating.
It is. I mean, even the banks, we tell them, can you just be a little more lenient? Because one, we can't even go to the city where our bank is and we can't process anything because we don't have online banking for our office account. So it was really hard. And when we found out that majority of the outbreaks actually happen in banks, obviously all the more that it gets, harder for us. But we managed to find other solutions for that. So it's actually good that the Philippines is, becoming more tech savvy in terms of transactions. And hopefully that will flourish in the next few years to come.
Let's hope. So, I mean, we can't talk about tourism without talking about vaccination. And you've touched a little bit earlier about how Philippines is a bit slow right now. So what is the current state right now? What are their plans?
Yeah, so as mentioned, only the vulnerable groups are allowed to take the vaccination for now. And we have 12% that are already vaccinated in total, 10 of which have already had two doses. So it's it's a little slower than usual, but it's also because majority of the Western countries have already gotten a hold of the supplies of their vaccines before us, and we were left with not a lot of supplies, right? So it's a little bit difficult for us at the moment, but hopefully we'll reach herd immunity by 2022 or 2023, but who knows.
Philippines is a relatively interesting case because outbound tourism has been permitted since last year under certain terms. Where are customers booking? How are they going? Are they booking it themselves? Are they using agencies? What's sort of been the patterns that you've seen?
We've had tourists traveling to Tanzania during the holidays. And though back then, because there was only a one-night quarantine period where they just had to wait for their test result to come out negative, because of the recent, or at least the last few months, quarantine regulations, it's been really hard to sell outbound trips due to the longer quarantine requirement, which is a 10-day quarantine, mandatory quarantine in a hotel facility. So it is difficult, but although These days, we're getting more and more requests for travels to Europe, Morocco, and Turkey, but for longer durations, from 2 weeks to 2 months, to make the most out of their travel abroad before they come back to the country. Hopefully, these will materialize between September till end of the year.
And have you had any requests for vaccination tour packages? Because we've seen that in quite a few other countries like Thailand, like Indonesia, where outbound travel agents are selling vaccine tour packages to like the US to go get vaccinated. Is that something that's popular in the Philippines?
It is. We've had inquiries, but it's a little bit difficult to really roll them out because we've had problems with the U.S. embassy because majority of the people were requesting for these vaccine packages. They don't have a U.S. visa and the U.S. embassy is not open for tourist visa application. So it's a little bit difficult to sell it at the moment. We have tried looking for other destinations that offer this, and Maldives was one of them, but unfortunately, you know, it's also a little bit difficult to sell that. So we have not had any bookings for any vaccination tours at the moment.
And you alluded there also to the quarantine issue, and quarantine periods tend to change at the moment. You know, that is just a real block on travel generally, isn't it? Is there a level of quarantine period that people are prepared to accept, or is just quarantines generally just a blocker for travel?
Quarantine generally, it is a blocker for travel because we were supposed to have a lot of groups that were leaving during the first part of the year, but they decided to not push through after the government extended the quarantine period to 10 days. And then afterwards, you know, that's still the issue at the moment. Although I think we've been seeing some fatigue coming from travelers who are already eager to come out and they wouldn't mind a 10-day quarantine going back as long as they can spend 2 weeks to 2 months outside of the country to make the most out of it.
And how about for domestic tourism? Have you seen any interesting trends kind of developing over this year or, you know, towards the latter part of last year?
One thing we actually noticed was because of the boom of TikTok, so other social media platforms, more and more people are highlighting less visited places. So even just the cafes that are quaint and, you know, Instagrammable, even the little resorts or camping sites around Metro Manila, they were being featured. And obviously the younger generation would like to go there on their own. So it did change a bit the market wherein they would like to see or book these on their own and experience this for themselves. And majority of the travel agents really couldn't find these.
So Felice, the talk in Southeast Asia at the moment, the talk anyway, is about reopening, whether that's partially, whether that's fully, or whether that gets pushed into next year. What's the situation in the Philippines with regard to reopening? Do you think there's any hope for 2021?
Honestly, no. Problem is because of the rise of the new variants, so the Delta, the Lambda. I don't think we're going to open anytime soon. I mean, we're also one of the countries that's holding the longest lockdowns in the world. So I really have no hopes for the Philippines opening up this 2021. But if we do reach 50% vaccination, I think we will be reopening by 2022. For incoming travelers.
And do you think that would be on a national basis or that would be specific islands?
I think it should be on a national basis because otherwise it wouldn't make sense for majority of the travelers coming into the Philippines to go here if it's only the mainland that's open or the capital that's open.
So that's a pretty gloomy picture for inbound tourism, though probably quite realistic. Has any development so far this year given you cause to be hopeful for the tourism industry in the Philippines?
One thing is that actually the travel agencies, even if they only temporarily close, they're still hopeful that things are going to go back to normal as soon as possible. And the light we see on that is what I mentioned before. There's already fatigue amongst Filipino travelers. They don't even want to wait anymore for any, you know, travel restrictions that are being put into place within the Philippines. They really want to go out there. And so we've been getting a lot of inquiries for outbound trips. For inbound, however, there have been more interest in, you know, planning the trips that they have here and planning for itineraries that they think can work for their markets. But in terms of innovations within the country. I think that the Department of Tourism is also doing a really good job in trying to integrate technology in terms of, you know, providing more information about the destinations we have across the country. They also now have a better website wherein you can showcase a lot of the unique things to do in different parts of the country, also highlighting the little destinations that not many tourists or incoming tourists actually know of. So that's something that I really look forward to being flourished in the future. Also, one thing is that because we've transitioned into online transactions now, we're hoping to really see more travel agencies adopting online transactions and, you know, seamless payments. We've had a lot of startups like PayMaya, Coins.ph. Now we're getting actually a lot more other advertisements for other types of apps in which we can accept credit card transactions from clients, and it will be easier for them to book through the agencies if payment solutions are much better off and they're given choices wherein they don't have to face the travel agencies themselves. At the same time, we also plan to roll out like an online travel agent portal in which they could just book everything that they need there, see availabilities, also see the itineraries that are available for them to sell to their passengers. So I'm not sure that will be done this 2021, but hopefully by 2023, it's going to be rolled out. So those are the things that we're really looking forward to.
It's great to hear that that technological facilitation will be there when demand actually comes back. Just a little follow-up on one of the things you mentioned there, Felice. You mentioned that you are getting inquiries at the moment for outbound. Those inquiries are for people wanting to travel this year or next year or both. And where are they looking to go?
Actually, majority of them are for this year, which is from September until December. And they're actually looking to go to Europe because they see that fully vaccinated travelers coming from the Philippines are now accepting Philippine travelers. At the same time, the embassies have also opened up for tourist visa applications. So they really want to go. And the thing is, we also have to explain to them, like, look, if you want to travel to France and maybe travel to Spain and then Switzerland afterwards, that's fine, because those countries do accept fully vaccinated travelers. But it doesn't mean that you can freely travel all Schengen areas, because one, some of them the border rules apply depending on the origin country or depending on where you came from in the last 14 days. Because, for example, if you wanted to go, say, in Austria or in Spain and you're coming from France and France is under the red list, then you might need to have, or at least there might be more restrictions in place for you. So everything changes on a weekly, even daily basis. And so we're also a little bit careful in informing the potential passengers about these situations. We've actually had, we've heard the situation from our partner Europa Mundo Vacations, in which they had a bus that went to Monaco. And obviously the rule then was just to have like full vaccination. And I mean, since it's technically within France, there shouldn't be any travel restrictions in place, but they had to wait 4 hours because apparently two of the passengers in the bus didn't have full vaccinations and they all had to go RT-PCR testing that same spot. They couldn't even go in the country. So same thing that happened to a family that was supposed to continue onwards to their trip to Norway from Denmark, and then suddenly that same day Norway decided to shut their borders again. So it is a little bit tricky to sell European tours now. So we're really always up to date every single day about the entry restrictions, and we try to inform our passengers that it's much better to just stick to one country for now if they wish to travel to Europe, and to really enjoy the serenity of slow travel at the moment. So it is tricky, but things can be done, and it just needs a lot of patience and being detail oriented in terms of checking all the restrictions in place.
Needs a lot of patience. Yeah, I think that probably just sums up the tourism industry in general, I think, in Southeast Asia right now. So thank you so much, Felice, for coming on the show. I think Gary and I really both enjoyed listening about what's been going on in the Philippines and in Europe, as well as a kind of added bonus for our listeners. So that brings us to the end of today's Philippines of the Year So Far special edition of the show. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and don't forget to send us your thoughts and comments on what we discussed with Felice or what we missed out. You can drop us an email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com or message us on our LinkedIn page at the Southeast Asia Travel Show or Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Yeah, meanwhile, you can catch up with the Southeast Asia Travel Show's full back catalogue on our website, www.theseasiatravelshow.com, or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, Castbox, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, and Amazon Music. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on each app. And if you do listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please remember to rate and review us, because that helps other people to find the show.
That's a wrap for today, and we look forward to talking Southeast Asia travel and tourism again with you very soon.